Please offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Aloha Kin.
Hi everyone, my name's Ken and I'm an alcoholic. And I just like to give hope to some everyone. But you know, when I talk, I get so stuck on my drunkologue that I sometimes don't get to tell you all the good things that's happened to me in my sobriety. I'm going to try and do my best to get it all in here tonight. They call me Aloha Ken, and a lot of you probably think it means love and hello, and it does mean those things. But if you ever get to Hawaii and go to a meeting called the 12 Coconuts, you'll hear what their meaning of it is. And aloha means a lot of happy alcoholics. So, that was one of my dreams before I got sober, was going to Hawaii. I got sober in San Francisco in 1993 this time, but I've been in and out of these rooms since I was 20 years old. The first time I was in these rooms, I was still in the Navy. Matter of fact, I was tied to a bed with tubes going all over me, and I was in this little glass room because they was afraid if one of those tubes came out of me, I might bleed to death. And I was at the ripe old age of 20, and I still thought I was too young to be an alcoholic. And as soon as I got out of there, I got discharged from the Navy, and I wasn't even old enough to drink when I got into that program. And I'd turned 21 while I was there, and that's the legal age in Indiana. So, I got home, and as soon as I got home, I went to work in this factory where I worked at before I went into the Navy. 7 days later, I was fired for drinking. So I thought, well, there's a factory right next door. So I went over next door, and they hired me, and I got a job there, and I was fired within 2 weeks for drinking. So there was another factory next to that one. So I went over there, and I'm 21 years old. I got hired there, and I almost made it past my probation period, but 29 and a half days later, I got fired from that job for drinking. All of it was from drinking, I was put in jail 3 times in 2 weeks in that period of time. And the second time I was there in that 2 weeks, the judge said, weren't you just here? And I said, yes, sir. And he said, well, if I see you again in 6 months, you're going to do 6 months at the State Farm, which was the prison in Indiana. And that weekend I got put back in jail again. And I wasn't a bad drunk. I just was drunk on the street. I was a happy drunk most of the time. But I'm in there during a holiday weekend and everybody's making fun of me because I'm going to go to prison. And I didn't think that was funny at all. And so I got to the courthouse and the judge was gone. It was a different judge. And he said, I don't have any paperwork on you. Have you ever been here before? And I said, no, sir, Your Honor. So I just got a dollar in court costs. And so I moved to another town and I went out drinking with my uncle. And when I woke up the next morning, I see bars. And I don't remember being in jail. I don't remember doing anything. And you talk about a scary feeling, being a young kid in jail and not knowing why you're there. I was in a blackout. And and nobody was there to tell me anything. And so, that was, and my aunt told me if I went to the VA hospital in Marion, Indiana, that they had just started an alcoholism program there, that it would be easier when I went to see the judge. So I went there. And when I was 20 and I was given a choice when I was 20 when I was in the Navy of going to this rehab program on the Navy base in Long Beach or going most likely to the brig. Brig, which was the Navy jail. So that was, at that time, I thought I did go to the rehab because I didn't want to go to jail, but I thought I was too young to be an alcoholic, so I didn't take it seriously. But this time, when I got into that program back in Indiana, I went to the VA hospital, and then I went to a halfway house, and I took my drinking, I took my sobriety seriously at that time. You know, I got involved with people. I had a lot of fear. And you know, when I was a kid growing up, I swore I would never drink because I didn't want to be raised the way my parents raised us. You know, we never had new clothes. We wore hand-me-down clothes and we had holes in our shoes. And that's not very pleasant in snow and ice back in Indiana. So, you know, I got into this program and I went from the VA hospital to a halfway house, and then I got into AA and I started doing the things that I was supposed to be doing. You know, and at that particular time, I was 23 years old and I really believed that I was an alcoholic then. And you know, from that time on, I have always known that I was an alcoholic. But it didn't keep me sober. And I never once went out thinking that maybe I can drink again, or maybe I can get away with it this time, because I always drank to get drunk. I always wanted to be drunk. At any rate, you know, when I was a kid growing up and I swore I'd never drink, I was a very shy person, an introvert. So when I started drinking, I wasn't that person anymore. And one of the reasons I started drinking in the first place is because right out of boot camp, we went into boot camp, and it was during the Vietnam War, and so we didn't get any liberty, so they just pushed us right on through. And everybody said, well, what are you going to do after boot camp? And everybody said, well, I'm going to get drunk and get laid. So, you know, I got on that airplane coming home, and this is what made me the alcoholic that I was. You know, I got on that airplane, and the airline stewardess came up to me and asked me what I wanted to drink. And I said, you know, I'm naive and I'm scared, and I said, I'm not old enough to drink. And she said, son, you're in uniform, and we're up here in the air, and you can have anything you want. Well, I didn't know what to order because, you know, I didn't drink, but in the movies they ordered martinis. So I said, give me a martini. And I hated the damn thing, but you're allowed to, so I said, give me one more. And so then it was a champagne flight, and the lady happened to be from Indiana, and she kept coming back and forth and filling up my glass and made sure it was full all the time. And I got sick, and I never could drink champagne after that. But the airline stewardesses, prior to that, that shy little boy wasn't shy anymore with that booze in me. I had the airline stewardesses sitting on my lap. They were taking pictures, so when I got sick, they took me back to the back and took turns sitting next to me and holding a cold towel on my head. And then when we got to O'Hare Field in Chicago, my buddies carried me off the plane and they set me in a chair and said, don't move. And I sit there, and a few minutes later, this lady came up to me and she said, weren't you on flight so-and-so? And I said, yes. And she said, son, I'm on these flights for business all the time. And she said, they're so damn boring. But she said, this is the best flight I ever been on. And she said, son, you got the makings of a fine sailor. And you know, it wasn't 5 minutes later that a man came up here, came up to me and said the same thing. So, you know, that was like the answer to my being shy and being the introvert. Alcohol became my answer. And then it became my destroyer. You know, like I said, it just got worse for me, all the way down. Like I said, I was in these rooms at the age of 20, and I didn't listen. I see a lot of people in here that are young, and I was young, and I didn't listen. And I'd hear stories that are similar to mine or maybe worse, and I used to think, my God, if that happened to me, I'd quit too. But you see, I went back out, and worse things happened to me. You know, after that time I told you I was sober in Indiana and I was doing what I was supposed to be doing, but you know, things was going okay for a while. I had a sponsor who set me down, and he asked me, he says, you know, how is things going? And I got a shit-eating grin on my face, and I started him hauling around. And he said, work in meetings, right? And I said, yeah. He said, what do you do for fun? He said, do you go to dances or movies or anything? Well, I'm that shy little boy without that booze in me. And so I said, I don't do any of that. So finally I met a lady who was not in the program, and she said, what makes a difference whether you're sober or not? You're never at home. So one by one I quit doing the things that was keeping me sober. Pretty soon I had commitments all over town at different meetings, and I quit doing them. But I kept going to meetings, and pretty soon I slowed down on my meetings, and pretty soon I wasn't going at all. And I kept telling myself, well, you know, I pray every day, and I read the 24-hour book, and blah, 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 and I'll be okay. But once I'm away from you people, everything's out the door. I don't have that reminder every day. You know, and it's not long before I forget. And, you know, like I said, when I was doing those things, I really thought I would never drink again. Like I said, I was 23 when I came into the rooms then. But when things didn't work out with me and that lady, I couldn't accept it. And that's a part of our program. We got to learn acceptance. And at any rate, I laid in bed. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't eat. I mean, my mind was a total wreck. And I kept going to meetings, and I kept whining to people at the meetings. But, you know, when you're going through that self-pity, you sometimes have a closed mind, and nothing seems to get in, and nothing penetrates. And finally, one day, I'm laying in bed, and I'm talking to God, and I'm looking up at the ceiling and talking to God, and I said, you know, God, I can't live like this. I said, I just can't handle it. I said, I'm going to drink, and I said, I know I'm an alcoholic, but and then I decided that I was didn't want none of the people in AA to see me when I drank, so I waited. I got in my car the next day, and I started driving for California from Indiana, and I figured after I get across the state line, I'll drink. And so I got into Missouri. I found a motel next to a bar so I wouldn't have to drive, because I knew I was going to get drunk. And I got in there, and it was a rinky-dink little bar, and played pool for a while, but it got boring. I said, where's all the action at? I said, up here. So I went up this mountain road, and I went up there, and I got into that bar, and those people were breaking beer bottles and trying to kill each other. And I said, well, this ain't my kind of bar neither. So I'm going back down the mountain road, and it started to rain, and I drove my car right off the Ozark Mountains, and a tree trunk stopped me from going all the way down. That was my very first drunk after leaving AA for that 2.5 years. So when they say it gets worse, it does. Maybe that wouldn't happen to you. But you see, I didn't stop then. 11 months later, I'm in the Portland VA hospital, and they took a piece of my liver out. They thought I was jaundiced. That was my next trip into AA. And I went to a VA hospital through their treatment program in American Lake, Washington. I could go on and on. I stayed sober for a year and a half then, and I did the same thing, put another woman in front of my sobriety. So, and when I do that, I'm in trouble. Because by doing my inventory when I got sober this time, I realized that sobriety has to be first in my life. If I'm not sober, I don't have a life anyway. Because I'm the kind of drunk that's drunk all the time. And I'm a runner, you know. I'm always on the road. I took sitting in a bar in Indiana, and my uncle, it was a different time. This guy says, let's go to Florida. And we just jumped in the car and took off for Florida. I just kept thinking it's going to be better somewhere else. And I ended up staying in missions and Salvation Armies. You know, I got a job down there working for minimum wage, cleaning oil slicks off these rich people's houses. this, my job was just holding on to a hose while these other people got in there and started doing the hard work. But they're making big bucks, and I'm making minimum wage, so they took us out drinking, and they paid for everything. So I thought that worked out okay. But you see, I just... You know, I got back into these rooms in San Francisco in 1993, and like I said, I've been in and out several times, and in the meantime, I had several jobs. You know, and I told you about the times I got fired when I first got out of it. It was like that was the story of my life. I had lots of jobs in lots of places, from nice jobs to terrible jobs. I managed some pretty nice hotels and I some pretty good flea bags. But I've also, you know, found a job that was pretty nice. I could go out and party every night. I could drink all day long, and I still made money, and I got to travel. So I started giving away teddy bears for love affairs. I started working at the carnivals and going from town to town. And, you know, and I did that for a long time. And I did it back east. And whenever I was out of money or had something going on, I could go, if they had a carnival in town, I could go tell them who I used to work for, and they would hire me. It was kind of something that I just kind of fell into. You know, I don't know how to explain it, but I started making pretty good money doing that. But you know, eventually I even got fired from that job. In Bakersfield, I was doing it down there. And I did it a couple of times down there. I played there. I played Fresno. But when I was down there, I got into it with my boss's daughter. And she started cussing me out in Gypsy. And she was a Gypsy, and she was mean. But her dad was on me. Me and her dad got along fine, and no matter how drunk I would get, he always kept me around for some reason or another. But when it was come to his daughter, he started cussing me out in Gypsy. So I said, to hell with it. So I just took the money I figured they owed me, and I just took a hike. So I got downtown Bakersfield, and I didn't know a thing about Bakersfield. I mean, when I was there before, I stayed in a nice motel. Kenny Rogers and his band stayed there, and I spent a lot of money in there, and every time the waitress would wait on us, we were high rollers. We'd give the waitress a $5 tip every time she came to our table. And so I went from that. So I walked out of this place and I went downtown and I went to this bar in this hotel, and it was just boring. It was nobody in there but me and one other person and the bartender. So I didn't know. I went to the phone booth and I got the phone book and I looked for a place that might have sounded exciting anyway. So I called a cab, and the cab picked me up, drove me around the block, and let me off across the street. Well, in the meantime, my money was just in my pocket, and it fell out of my pocket into the cab when I went to pay the cab. So when I got into the bar, I barely had enough money to pay for my drink. I had no money, no job, and I didn't know where I was at. So I ended up once again living with the winos, this time on 19th Street in Bakersfield. But you know, I've did this many times. When I was in the Navy, that's how I learned about the missions. I ran away from the Navy when I was 20 to begin with, and I wanted to work, but I was afraid. The only kind of idea I had was my military idea, and I just ran away. I'm AOL, so I can't use it. So I ended up staying with the winos. And, you know, but you know, when I got sober this time, I'm going to tell you about some of the things that's happened to me since I've been sober. Things that I often forget about. And good things and bad things happen to you in sobriety. When I got sober this time, true story. I'm in this, I had enablers in San Francisco. This lady kind of took me under her wing. And when she found out I was homeless, she called her husband and said I was going to be staying on their couch. But I would go in there with her when she opened the bar in the morning, and I'd drink all day for free. And because of her and her other bartender friends, I was able to drink for free with them. And then there was another bar down there by Original Joe's that I used to go in there. And the guy there who tended bar became my friend. I could go knock on the door at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and he let me in, and I'd drink all night. And across the street from the 21 Club, where I practically lived, it was a Seaman's bar, and I went over there and I would drink for free in there. And that seemed, the people that were in there, people just seemed to like me for some reason. And I ended up always having a place to go and drink. And I lived in some of those bars. They had a mattress and a bed set up for me. So I thought I died and went to heaven in the beginning, because it's beat sleeping on those park benches or out in the parks with those other winos or in a mission in a Salvation Army somewhere. But you see, it was just progressing. I would sit on that bar stool, you know, and I never really wanted to quit drinking, but I didn't like the way I was living. I used to think, if I'm not here, who's going to take care of me? Because I just wasn't functioning very well. I was always drunk. And, you know, at any rate, I'd be sitting on that bar stool, and it was a corner bar, and I got windows here and windows here, and I can watch people in the mornings as they got their briefcase and they're headed for the train to go to work. And I used to wish I could be one of those. You know, I just wished I couldn't get off the bar stool. And I thought if I could just get a job, I could get enough money to get me away from the Tenderloin. But you see, I couldn't. I shook so much every day that I couldn't fill out an application. And after I had a drink to get over the shakes, then I didn't want to do it. I'm caught between a rock and a hard place, you know. Anyway, what I'm getting at is I went for many years. I did this, not just for a day or two or a week or two. This was for every day for years. And And one day I just wanted to get out of the rat race, and I tried not to drink once, and I shook so much I couldn't even get a glass of water to my face. So I tried it again, and a week or so later, and I just couldn't do it. And I went to the, you know, I had to hold on to things to get to the mirror, I mean to the bathroom, and I seen myself in the mirror, and these people who were my enablers that I told you about started off with the bartender who first took me under her wings. She was a nice looking young lady. I say young because she was much younger than me. She was 35 and she died of this disease. And then another friend who used to take me down to the Hofbräu to make sure I'd get something deep, but she always bought me a shot of Yukon Jack while we was there. She was a very beautiful woman. Everybody did everything for her. And she died from this disease about a year later. And then another friend of mine who was there, he hung himself. So, I mean, I knew this was I knew for years that I was an alcoholic. And at any rate, I had seen myself in the mirror. My eyes was way back in my socket. My face was grayish. And I remember saying out loud, I said, God, is this how I'm going to die too? And I just got on my knees and I said a prayer. I have no idea what I said in that prayer, but I got on my knees and prayed. And I got back in my bed, and I didn't do anything else. So sometime after that, the phone rang, and it was the guy who owns the bar. He said, I haven't seen you today or yesterday or whatever. And he said, get yourself together. I'm going to take you to the hospital. I don't want you to die like our friends. And you see, I didn't call him. I didn't call anybody. All I did was call on God. When I got on my knees and asked God for help, He just out of the blue called me, said he's taking me to the hospital. And you know, another God shot after that is because I was going through the DTs and I didn't realize it. And I couldn't handle it. I had to have a drink. And he hadn't showed up yet. And I started, actually had my hand on the door. And I decided, well, I'll call him just to make sure. And I went back to my phone and I called. And he said, I got busy. I'm coming right now. And that's how I got here. And you know, I started coming to meetings. I started. I went to that treatment center again, which is unusual because I had just been in that same VA hospital in January of that year. And the reason I say it's amazing because they let me back in twice in the same year. So that's how I ended up back in these rooms. And you see, I was blessed. You know, I believe that this program, a lot of it depends on our willingness. And when I got sober in San Francisco, I went to a lot of meetings, and they used to talk about honesty and open-mindedness and willingness. And you know, I had all of that fear that I had when I was that kid back in high school. I didn't know how to be around people. I didn't want people to talk to me at meetings. I didn't want to talk in meetings. I was just that scared little boy all over again. A lot of activities was going on around the rooms and stuff, and I was always asked to go to coffee and stuff afterwards. Well, to begin with, I didn't have the money. You know, things are expensive in San Francisco, and besides that, I was still picking up cigarette butts off the ground because I was too much pride to ask somebody for a cigarette. But I wanted to stay sober. And I kept coming to meetings, and finally, after a while, I got into service. And I have been in service ever since I've been sober, and it's a big part of my sobriety. But I've been going to this meeting at Post and Mason for about 6 months or 7 months, I don't know. And this guy came up to me after the meeting, or before the meeting, he said, we need a new literature person. And they have different people for every position up there at the meetings, because most of the meetings are pretty big. And I said, he said, would I like to do it? And I said, I don't know. Well, he misunderstood me. He went in and told the people at the meeting that I volunteered to do it, which was not true, because I still had all that fear in me. And when he said that, that fear hit me inside. But you know, when I was walking home from that meeting, I got a warm feeling inside, like, you know, it's okay. When I was sober in the past and when I was in service and doing service work, I felt like I was a part of, like I belonged, and it was good for me. And so, you know, like I said, good and bad happens in these rooms. And I went to a lot of meetings, and I had started getting a few commitments. And then finally, I still didn't have anything, and somehow or another I ended up with a settlement from the government. Before I get to there, I went to this halfway house after I left the VA hospital at Fort Miley, and I was sober for like 60 days, I think. It was 5 days before Christmas. And they said, I have to move to this other house. And I said, you know, I just got used to the people I'm with. I still had all that fear. I said, I don't want to. They said, you don't have a choice. I said, I didn't do anything wrong. You don't have no reason to send me to this other house. And they said, well, it's going to happen next week. So I said, I can't do that. And so, at any rate, I'm walking through Golden Gate Park, because besides doing the halfway house, I did what they told me to for a change at the hospital, and I started doing outpatient programs, and I'm walking over there, and it's kind of rainy out, but I wanted to talk to God, and I didn't want to be on the bus. And I'm talking to God, and I'm saying I believe, and that's saying, well, I think I believe, and that's, well, I think I don't believe, and that's, but I'm willing to be willing. And I'm just going, I don't have a clue what's going on in my mind, except for, in all sincerity, I didn't want to drink. And so I'm talking to God, and as I get towards the other end of the woods, I can see some sunlight, and when I get past the trees, I looked up and there was a rainbow. And I just got a warm feeling inside when I seen that rainbow, like it's going to be okay. And you know it has been. It has been since then. Because I got in here, I had the willingness to do what you people are doing. To stay involved, to stay in service. I have a sponsor. One sponsor died, I have another sponsor today. I'm doing what, and I'm still doing today what I've been doing since I first got here. I read my 24-hour-a-day book. I read a couple of other spiritual books. My day always starts with prayer and meditation. And every night I thank God for another day of sobriety. I do not take my sobriety for granted. I did that before and it just got me into a lot of turmoil. And so I like the life I have today. And anyways, to get back to what I was saying before, it's not always good. I got a settlement from the government and I don't know if you could figure out where I went, but I went to Hawaii for my little trip. And the guy who kept me, when I walked out of that halfway house, and nowhere to go. I had already given up my hotel room. And at any rate, I ended up going back to the hotel where I was working before then. And, I worked there for 4 years, but they fired me 9 times in 4 years. But nobody wanted to work there because it was dangerous. Even the women were having knife fights there in the lobby. So it wasn't a safe place to be, but it was the only place I had. And the guy gave me a room that was out of order, and he said, you can stay here. And then finally I started working 1 day a week to pay for my rent. So anyways, when I got that settlement, he told me, when I was going to go on that trip, he said, well, just leave your money here in the safe deposit box. He said, nobody can get to it but me, the owner, and you. He says, that way I'm not going to be broke when I come home. So when I come home, I went there and that box was empty. And you know what? It was a little bit of anger, but mostly it was hurt. Because, you see, I didn't trust anybody when I come into these rooms. And the only reason I put any trust in him is because he kept me from being on the streets. Because when I left that halfway house, I told God, if I'm on the streets, the only way I know how to survive is to drink. And I said, I don't want to drink. So, and I didn't have to. Everything seemed to work out, but you see, it's because what I did was what I learned from you people in these rooms. And I'd go to meetings and I'd listen to people. And I went to this meeting and first of all, I did a little inventory. And is there anything I can do? It's already happened. There's nothing I can do. And so I talked to God and I prayed for acceptance. And then I went to a meeting and I seen this guy. He wasn't my sponsor, but I seen him and I said, would you go have coffee with me? And I went and talked. We had coffee and I talked with him. And you see, there's not an answer for some of these things, but just by talking to things, talking, it lets the power out of you, the obsession or whatever it is, that it makes it a little easier to get through. And you know, it was okay. I wasn't happy about it, but I was able to get through it. You know, and you know, just life goes on. I have a wonderful life today. Like I said, I got sober in San Francisco. I have a family today. I never thought I'd ever have a family. And another one of the good things is that I go out of my house and down to my driveway and I pick up my newspaper and I look around. And I remember the times that I was in one of these missions of Salvation Armies and they kick you out 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. It's still pitch black out and you don't know what the hell you're going to do all day long. You got nothing to do. And I'd go around these residential neighborhoods trying to steal a newspaper to figure out what's going on or what's can I do? Nowadays, I pick up my newspaper and I think, this is mine now, God. And it's all because I come into here. I had a little bit of willingness, and I try to listen to you people and try to do what you people have taught me. I do a lot of service work. I try to keep book study meetings and step study. I try to keep involved with some type of meeting like that. But not ever do I take my sobriety for granted anymore. I made that mistake before, and you know, it just brought me a lot of turmoil. Like I said, I've been close to death so many times because I left these rooms. And I've had a lot of friends. I have a friend in Hawaii. I actually got to move over to Hawaii. And I wished I still lived there, but my wife didn't like it, so I don't live there anymore. But moral of the story is me and him became buddies, and we did a lot of meetings together. And when we moved, or when I moved from there, him and this other friend of mine, they both quit doing the things that was keeping them sober. Now, I don't know where she is. She's out somewhere, a beautiful young lady that had 7 years of sobriety, and she almost had a year again. I sent her a card with, and it came back to me. So anyways, I keep in touch with her daughter. But my other friend retired from Hawaiian Airlines, and he was only out for a short time before he's dead. You know, and it's just a dangerous disease, and it's a deadly disease. And I'm just grateful to be here, and I'm certainly grateful for you people to be here. And I got hope from you people when I come into these rooms by listening to you. Anyway, thanks for listening to me.